about a 10-minute DVD that I'll put on right now. It basically gives you a little background information of how the arrest happened. It interviews myself, my wife, my kids, a friend that was at the gun show. So you get a bit of an idea of the actual mechanics of what actually happened, because everybody's always curious, and instead of answering the questions, I'll just play the DVD and let you watch it for yourself. Then I'll get into my talk, where I'll talk about why I'm doing what I'm doing and how this is an exciting opportunity for us to try to finally get this law defeated. So. You guys are going to get deaf, probably.
What?
The debate is finished. The debate is over.
We believe that the Bill C-68 is a lie. It's built on the backs of 14 women who got killed, and it does not make Canada a safer place.
The debate is not over.
One has a moral responsibility to just disobey an unjust law. Are we a nation of cowards? Why is it around every coffee table you hear people complaining and griping about what our government is doing? Nobody does anything about it. It's curious to note that I haven't met a single gun owner across this country that agrees with registration.
I'd like to get up to the door so they can't.
Yep. Oh, yes, no problem.
Yeah, we made it. Outdoors. Hopefully they get the message.
Dryden is a farming and pulp mill community just inside the Ontario-Manitoba border. On the morning of September 11, 2004, local gunsmith Bruce Montague and his 12-year-old daughter Katie had just finished helping a family friend set up his tables at the Dryden Gun Show. Bruce Montague was in the middle of purchasing a saddle for his young daughter when Ontario provincial police officers arrested him for violating Canada's Firearms Act.
The two of us headed down to Kingston to get him situated in his home. For his next third year now in university. So I got back just the day before my arrest, September 10th, and I was basically just resting and recuperating after that long drive. It's an 18 and a half hour drive.
Friday night, Bruce had mentioned the gun show, and we have a friend nearby who had some health problems, and Bruce was going to help him set up. And right away, Katie pipes up, "Can I go? Can I go?"
Katie kind of cheered things up a little bit.
"Oh, great, going to the gun show. Can I go, Dad?"
"Yeah, sure."
Yeah. But it was so bad, and then he got downstairs and some breakfast. He calmed down, came down to breakfast. Dad showed up because we were going along with him. So I see his heart problems, so I said we would go ahead to help him set up.
So we got Dan set up fairly early. And we were still about an hour before the show was slated to open. And we were browsing through all the vendors there and talking with a few people.
So we made a little thing and got the size of the kids and realized when
it was her size and it was physically still pretty sound.
And so we were happy to find that. And the man came up to my dad's dad so we could speak to him. But your dad's pretty sure that he's still up with him. Just gonna pay for the sun and I'll be right with you.
He was very insistent that I went out and talked to him. He said, "In a moment, I'm just in the middle of buying a saddle with my dad, I'll be right with you."
And then he sort of walked and the guy said, "I need to speak to you right now." And then he tried to take the saddle, just hold on a second, pay for the saddle and I'll be right with you. And my dad just got home and he said, struggled with it a bit, and then he said, "You ever left?" Another man came and got my dad's other arm.
Well, he grabbed me right away. "Man, this is something more serious." And shortly after, I kind of put my arm free. He said, "You're under arrest." "Well, really? Well, we just finish this up here. I'll take care of my daughter, have her, calm her down a little bit, because she's starting to get a little antsy here, because I've been all of a sudden surrounded."
Some other people came in and
she was getting a little distressed. She was visibly distressed at what was going on, and I don't blame her. any 12-year-old kid would.
I didn't want her traumatized any more than necessary, but that wasn't going to happen. The cops had their agenda. It was going to happen this way, regardless.
Katie was just left there. I heard about this later, just stood there crying. It's difficult to reassure somebody as you're getting, I was literally being dragged away, but there was obvious there was force applied to me to leave, threat of physical violence looming imminently. And there was no doubt about it, even a child could see that. Don't worry, everything's under control or something to that effect, you know. Just trying to give her some reassurance that, you know, the world hasn't come to an end for her. Just talk to Dan. Dan will look after you, don't worry.
When we went over to see Dan called me mom and told me mom to come over.
Yeah, she was pretty upset and crying, and then tried to settle her down. There was a couple of people come over and recognized a couple of the detectives from the Dryden branch, and sort of went and asked them what had happened. And they had told me that Bruce was being arrested, and I believe somewhere around that time I went and called Donna, Bruce's wife, to tell her that he had been arrested and that Katie was at my table. She was pretty upset. She better come in and maybe pick her up.
Every so often on a Saturday, I'll make lasagnas and then calls and I'll freeze them. And I'll make like 12, 15 lasagnas and freeze them. And so I had men and Collie on the go, and I had the meat all cooked, almost all the meat cooked, and everything was going, and the phone rang.
And I didn't know what was happening until Katie came back to my table, pretty upset and crying that her dad had got arrested, and then word was out that, you know, the police had come and arrested him. Mm-hmm.
And it was this friend from the gun show, and he said, Donna, there's been an incident here. Bruce has been taken by the police, and Katie is here, and she's really upset. I think you should come and get her. Handy grand for me. I'm pretty sure he repeated the whole thing to me again. I was sort of numb.
Yeah, I woke up. My mom was showing up something about Dad and into trouble with the police. So I quickly got up, got dressed, and
we went to the gun shop. We got there, and there was a police officer came up to me. He was plain clothes dressed.
The police officer came up, and my mom identified him as a police officer because she did guarding for them.
So I knew who the officer was, and he said, your daughter's pretty upset, and I'd like to go to get her.
Then the police officer told us that we would be going to the OPP station briefly to clear up some stuff.
I just assumed they would be releasing Bruce, and I would go to Katie and go to the police station. I got in there. Katie was extremely upset, trembling.
My mom went over and comforted Katie. And
yeah, she was pretty shook up. I don't think it helped seeing Katie shook up, you know, as well. It just a real bad situation.
I gave her a hug. We talked with the friend that was there. He gave us both a hug, and we left the gun show.
I did phone Donna, and her and her, I believe Michael, yeah, it was Michael, because Stephen was away at university. Michael came in with her, and from there they basically got Katie and I assume went to the police station.
Once we got to the police station, we went into the main boardroom, and the officer told me that I was also under arrest.
You have reached non-defense with me. We have finally succeeded in getting charged with a new firearm attack. All the firearms in the house have been seized, including customer guns. If you have a firearm at the shop, it is now in the possession of the Ontario Provincial Police. You will have to contact them to arrange pickup. Bruce will be appearing at a show cause hearing on Monday, September the 20th at the Kenora Courthouse at 10 a.m. Please come out to show your support. Bruce is taking all the risk in fighting this bill. We have lost lots of property, freedoms, privacy. Donations can be made to the Bruce Montague Scrap C68 Fund. RR2, site 230, Box 20, Dryden, Ontario. PAN 2Y5.
The debate is settled. The debate is over.
The debate is not over. Ontario gunsmith Bruce Montague is now taking that debate to the courts.
For the past year, so that gives a little bit of background as to what actually happened and when it happened. I'll give you a little bit of background of myself and our family so that hopefully you can identify we're just ordinary Canadians. I grew up in Niagara Falls, so did my wife. She was my high school sweetheart. We got married right after high school and moved to Hamilton. I see your mind's working already. We just knew what we wanted. That's why we got married. Our firstborn was 5 years after that. I'll get into that later. We went to Hamilton, to Mohawk College. I took a 3-year computer engineering course. My wife took a programming course. After graduating there, we moved to Kitchener-Waterloo area, where I worked for an engineering firm in the research and development lab. Worked there for about 12 years. During that time, I took up gunsmithing as a hobby. That was going fairly well, so I moved, opened up a sporting goods shop, had about 5 people working for me. I was starting to make more money than at that job than I did during my day job. And I was really getting kind of sick and tired of the rat race and the traffic and everything down in southern Ontario. Seemed like my wife and I always wanted to move north for vacations and holidays. So why not try living up there and do gunsmithing as a full-time job? So we did that in 1991. As many of you are aware, in 1991, that's about the time our gun laws really took a severe turn for the worse. That's just me. I've got impeccable timing. So that was 1991. We moved to Dryden. Been doing gunsmithing full-time now for 13 years. My wife and I have been married 26 years now. We have 3 children. Our oldest is Stephen. You didn't see in the video. He's in his 3rd year of pre-med at Queen's University. Our second is Michael. You saw in the video. He'll be starting university this fall. Actually, he was quite excited. He called me a couple of days ago and he got accepted at Concordia University in Edmonton. And he's got aspirations to become a pastor. Their third is Katie, who you saw in the video. She'll be starting high school this year. And she's got aspirations to become a fine arts instructor. She's in a fine arts program right now. She kind of takes after her mother. She likes arts, crafts, and music, and she does quite well in it. So that's her hopes and dreams. Basically that, in a nutshell, is our life. Our lives. It's pretty mundane, ordinary lives, just trying to eke out a living like most Canadians are. And furthermore, we have no criminal record. Neither my wife nor myself have any criminal record. No criminal associations. Just ordinary Canadians. The difference right now is I'm standing before you today, charged by our Liberal government as a criminal. My crime, not registering my firearms, refusing to get a license. I know there's many in this country, especially in the big cities, that will say, so what? And that's what I want to talk to you about. This is my so what, and my rebuttal to them. Many people think that this fight of yours and mine is only about firearms. Now, I want to make one thing perfectly clear right up front here. My opposition to this Firearms Act has actually very little to do with the actual gun. It's not about hunting or target shooting, even though I do both. It's not about handguns or shotguns or which might be considered a good gun or a bad gun, if there is any such thing as a bad gun. It's not even about the billions of dollars that are being wasted on this ill-conceived law. It really has to do, in my mind, about one thing and one thing only: our rights. Fundamental, God-given, human rights. These are rights that have been paid for, bought and paid for in full with the blood of the fallen men and women that we justly pay tribute to every November 11th. Have you ever heard that old saying, lest we forget? I'm beginning to think many Canadians have forgotten what they have fought for to maintain our rights and freedoms in this country. and we're slowly getting them taken away from us. The Firearms Act, I feel, very clearly violates our rights and freedoms, and it goes directly against our constitutional, our, what our Constitution guarantees to us. I'll get into that a little bit later. Namely, the God-given right that I'm talking about is the right to life. That's really what this boils down to. Many people are afraid to discuss it or talk about it, but that's really, in my mind, what this boils down to, and that's what our Constitution addresses, believe it or not. So that's something that we shouldn't have to be ashamed about, standing up and exercising our God-given rights, namely the right to life, and the right to own the tools necessary to feed, clothe, or defend that life. Here's another so what. Some think that this Firearms Act is all about public safety. Our government tries to tell us that, but the facts just don't add up. There's been many peer-reviewed research papers done in this area, one of which was done by our own Canadian professor, Gary Mauser, of the Simon Fraser University. In short, these studies prove conclusively that our gun control laws that we have right now do nothing to improve public safety or reduce crime. As a matter of fact, it does the exact opposite. They're very interesting studies to read, and after you read them, it becomes fairly obvious, once you're informed of how these laws are being enacted and the repercussions of these laws, for the reasons why the crime rate actually goes up. Take a look at our handgun registry. That's been in place now since 1934 at a cost of over $600 million. For years now, handguns have been the weapon of choice for career criminals. The handgun registry has done nothing to prevent any of those crimes. Even the RCMP's have been, the commissioner of the RCMP has been quoted saying that. Now, with this great track record behind them, with the handgun registry, they now want to extend this to long guns as well. I, for one, can't figure out where they're getting these Einsteins for lawmakers. It just doesn't make sense. It seems like a self-perpetuating system they've got going. You come up with gun laws that restrict the good guys' gun ownership. Oh my God, crime rate's going up. I guess we better come up with more gun laws. Crime rate's still going up. It's like adding fuel to the fire. Throw a little gasoline on a fire that you're trying to put out and see how well it works. Here's another so what. Some think that because you have to license and register your automobile, it's not a big deal to license and register your guns, right? How many people have heard that one? Yeah, the anti-gunners love to throw that at us. The government likes to throw it at us. I hear this one so much, and it's such an insulting comparison, but it's an easy comparison to debunk. Owning a car without a license or registration is not a criminal offense. Plain and simple, the discussion should stop right about there. And as long as you don't drive your automobiles on the road, there's no requirement to license or register anyway. You can drive them on your property or collect them on your property if you want. Merely failing to register your firearm makes one a criminal in this country. A simple paperwork infraction. For the first time that I'm aware of in Canadian history, Calvin might be able to correct me on this, for the first time I'm aware of in Canadian history, you can now become a criminal for doing absolutely nothing. You've owned a gun for years, your FAC has lapsed, not a requirement in the past. Now all of a sudden this new law comes along telling you you have to register your firearms and get a license. You sit quietly in your home, maybe you're a hermit, you're not aware of the changes or whatever. You do absolutely nothing. You're now classified as a criminal with a possibility of facing 10 years in prison for that crime. I find that horrendous. It gives a whole new definition, really, to the phrase criminal act, doesn't it? There's no act involved. In the good old days, you had to do something to become a criminal. You had to hurt somebody, or you had to do something morally or ethically wrong to become classified as a criminal. This is a new era we live in now. I think Canadians in general should be kind of shocked and disgusted at what's happening. we firearms owners are at the butt end of this right now. We know very well what's happening to us, and it can very well happen to anybody. Here's another so what. Some think that because I got myself into this mess, I can get myself out of it. First of all, as I mentioned earlier, it took me a long time to get myself into this mess, so I'm obviously not all that competent at becoming a criminal, and I'm not too sure how competent I am to get myself out of it by myself. We're all in this legislative mess together. The only real difference is I decided to take a stand and stick my neck out with the hopes that everybody who's complaining about this firearms law will pitch in and support me in this constitutional challenge. I can't fight this alone. It takes a team effort, and that's what I'm banking on. Without support, I'm going to fold. There's no two ways about it. Here's another so what. Some think that it's the law. And if we respect the rule of law, we would obey this law as well, even if we don't agree with it. That's the concept of rule of law. And it gave me a problem for quite a few years. And as a Christian, I was brought up and taught to follow the laws of the land, even if you don't agree with them. That's what law and order is based on. And I do agree in principle with following the rule of law. But there's an interesting point here that most firearms owners don't realize. And that's what enabled me to forge ahead in this battle and still have a clear conscience. This new law that we have, Bill C-68, tries to turn gun ownership into a privilege that can be taken away at any time. That's what the licensing provision of this law does. Not the registration. We always hear people talk about the gun registry. I even use that term myself because that's the phrase that's been coined about this law. The gun registry is only part of it. The licensing is the part, the PAL and the POL. That's the part that actually removes your right to own firearms. FAC didn't. FAC was a different system. That was a permit or a certificate system, which in effect was a background check to make sure that you didn't have a criminal record and you were sound mind and body, I guess. And then that, I'll get into that a little bit more. I've got more documentation I can discuss with you if you have questions on that. That's something that most firearms owners aren't really fully up to speed on. That is the main thing that I'm really trying to attack here is the licensing provisions of this Firearms Act. Our Constitution that we have in Canada has been inherited by the British, the English Bill of Rights. That was our Constitution. In 1960, there was an amendment made called the Canadian Bill of Rights. It didn't trash the old Constitution. It just made amendments and brought forth a few things that were pertinent at that day and age. 1982, we had the Trudeau Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which I'm sure most of you are aware of. And that, again, was brought up due to issues that were pertinent in that day and age. Language was one of them, the language laws. But the preamble to both of those constitutions or charters or amendments to our Constitution, the preamble states that none of our pre-existing rights and freedoms have been diminished or removed. They are still in full force and effect. They're only addressing certain small issues. So when I give you these quotes, if you want to look it up, persevere a little bit, because the first thing that you're going to see in the library or in the internet is the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. That's the one everybody talks about. It's a small document and only deals with a very narrow range of rights and freedoms. The same with the Canadian Bill of Rights. It's our inherited constitution that gets into more of the basic fundamental rights and freedoms that we're dealing with. I'll read an excerpt out of that constitution where it actually guarantees our right to own firearms. You've probably heard of, we don't have any constitutional guarantee to property rights. We have it with regard to firearms. And that's the ironic part. The first piece of property that they seem to be anxious to take away is firearms. And that's the only piece of property that's specifically mentioned in the Constitution that I'm aware of. Quote, that the subjects may have arms for their defense. Yes, this is the Canadian Constitution, not the American one. That's what it says. That sounds fairly clear-cut to me. Our Constitution goes on to state, The Constitution of Canada is the supreme law of Canada. And any law that is inconsistent with the provisions of the Constitution is, to the extent of the inconsistency, of no force or effect. That, in a nutshell, is what this charter challenge is all about. I hope. That's the main thrust that I am working toward. That is the law that I'm obeying. We have two laws in this country, apparently, right now. We've got the Firearms Act, which is in contravention of the supreme law of Canada, which is our Constitution. So I'm not really practicing civil disobedience, as many people like to say I am. I'm obeying the supreme law of Canada, the Constitution. This other law is a sham. It was a fraudulent law. It goes directly against our Constitution. That law deserves to be ignored, just as our Constitution says it does. Now, I touched on this law's ran through Parliament fraudulently. There's a few areas I think that we can attack this law on. One is the constitutional issue here, which is the kingpin. The other two areas that I think also need to be addressed very closely is that the law was passed fraudulently. A law that's passed fraudulently, I believe, is not supposed to be a valid law. We'd like to get that turned down on that grounds. The other grounds that we're working at is something called the Oaks precedent. A law is not a valid law if it doesn't actually do what its stated purpose is. The stated purpose here is crime prevention and making society a safer place. I think we can prove fairly well that the law does not do that. Therefore, it should be struck down on that merit alone. That, I think, has to be addressed along with this constitutional issue. Because they may say, because it's a public safety issue, that is an exception to the Constitution. There's due process of law involved. I'm not a lawyer, but I'm starting to feel like I'm becoming one. This is something that's a tough fight to do. And I'm no Hollywood hero. I'll bleed just like everybody else in this room. And yes, I love my wife and kids. I want the same thing that every Canadian wants. I want the ability to live in a safe society that respects the individual's rights and freedoms. This gun law that we have right now does not respect our rights and freedoms, and it does not make Canada a safer place. I've got an uncomfortable topic here for most Canadians. Gun control is also an attack on our abilities to protect our families from either two or four-legged predators. Now, I want to see a show of hands in this room. How many people believe that if your life was threatened for any reason, whether it's a burglar or a bear come into your... Well, you don't get bears down here much, I guess. But if your life was threatened... Okay, you do then. If your life was threatened for any reason at all, how many people here believe that the police would arrive in time to save it? That's the same response I always get, a little bit of laughter.
I'm still waiting. It's been 2 years.
Yeah, if they think he's got a gun, it'll change. It's more likely, though, they will arrive in time to fill out their police report and then draw that pretty little chalk line around their body. On the other hand, I don't know a single individual, even the most rabid anti-gunner, that would not use a firearm if it were available and their life was threatened. It's common human sense. It's a fundamental right. People understand when their life is threatened, they need to defend themselves. And they'll use whatever means is necessary, even the anti-gunners. Speaking of anti-gunners, I jotted down a couple of points here that I think are fairly humorous. Because what it is, it's what I perceive the anti-gun mindset to be. The way these laws are all really designed to take our guns away, with the idea that it's going to make you safer. And I puzzle over that, thinking, that must mean that this is their train of thought. First, that the more helpless you are, the safer you are from criminals. Why else would they take guns away from the good guys? The crooks sure aren't going to hand them in or register them. The second point is that ordinary people, probably you and I, in the presence of a firearm, turn into slaughtering butchers. But never fear, Once the gun's removed, you revert back to normal again. Now, that theory's true. I'm sure there's... You must have a massive grave dump out here somewhere where all the shooters do in each other. No. Even though bureaucrats and public officials view self-defense with suspicion and disrespect, is not quite against the law, at least not yet. Having to defend oneself with deadly force is an uncomfortable thought with most people, myself included. But wishful thinking does not make that reality go away. We should never excuse ourselves from our responsibility to protect our families and our countrymen, which includes protection from physical harm and attack. The law does nothing to hinder the criminal element, only the law-abiding. Criminals love gun control. Makes their job safer. We need to recognize that our specific firearms laws that we have right now are designed specifically to remove firearms from the average Canadian, the shooter, the target shooter, the hunter, the collector. We've been attacked relentlessly for years now, and that attack is going to continue until every last one of our firearms are gone, unless we stand up and fight for our rights while we can. Many people think all we need is a change in political will. I say that'll never happen on its own. Any newly elected government really has only one mandate. That's to get re-elected again in 4 years. We have to make sure that whoever is in power listens to the will of the people. This is supposed to be a democracy here, and as such, we have a duty to get involved with our political and our legal processes. A duty. It's an uncomfortable job that needs to be done. That's what a duty means. Our apathy has gotten ourselves into this mess. We've sat in back too long letting the government run roughshod over us. The analogy I'd like to use here is that if you own a business and you hire an employee, do you just train him for the job and walk away and let him run your shop for you? Even if he's a good employee, we're all sinful by nature. We all make mistakes. We can all deviate off the path and need to be nudged back into place from time to time. And I'm sure we've all experienced that. The employee is no different. You may have a good employee, but they may get tempted and run off track. You need to keep them on track. The government is no different. They're supposed to work for us. They're public servants, remember. Democracy, remember. We have to make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to do. That's our job. It's an uncomfortable job sometimes, but we really have to do it. That really is what's gotten ourselves into this mess. So I encourage you, get involved. It's not as hard as you might think. I just came back from the convention in Montreal, the Conservative convention. And I was talked into going into that. Be a voting delegate. Get in there and make policy changes. Now, the Conservatives have fairly good policy already, especially in relation to the firearms laws. But it's a good idea to get involved. So I did. I became a voting delegate. It was as easy as that. I tell you, the world is run by the people that show up. I went in, prepared to do a speech, trying to make sure I can be voted in as a delegate. Basically, I showed up and was in. Same with a bunch of other firearms owners that showed up. We went to the convention. We made some serious change to their policy there. We think it's serious. Many of the people there, I don't think, quite understood it. We removed the term licensing altogether from the Conservative policy. They said they would repeal this act, and then the second half of their policy talks about instituting sane licensing, reasonable licensing controls on firearms ownership. We removed that phrase altogether. There is no longer licensing. Background checks is what it says now. So I think that's a significant shift there. There was only a handful out of 3,000 people there. I made the presentation there. I got a standing ovation just about. The vast majority were very much in favor of that change to their policy. There was maybe a dozen people against it. So the political will in the Conservative Party, at least, is very strong against licensing. So that's good news for you. I just thought I'd sidetrack off that a bit so you're aware of what's going on politically. Our rights and freedoms in Canada are not an urban or a rural problem. It's everybody's problem. And by God, I'm asking you to help yourselves by helping in this charter challenge. We need to force our lawmakers to step back and focus on what real crimes are. Not paperwork infractions, but a real crime. Somewhere where there's a victim or there's a serious moral or ethical problem. I like to use automobile analogies because the anti-gunners love to use them so much. I like to throw it back at them. If someone was to carelessly or maliciously kill another person with an automobile, do you think there would be an outcry to ban cars? You think there would be? No. No, of course not. And why would it? Everybody understands that the car was only the tool that was used. Why would anybody in their right mind ban an automobile just because people get killed by somebody using them maliciously? The actual crime was a person committing a wrong on another person. Prosecute the person. Why doesn't that same infallible logic hold true when a madman or a criminal kills somebody? All of a sudden there's a cry, let's get rid of the firearms. The problem is they're only getting rid of the firearms from the law-abiding citizen that's intimidated into bowing down to these laws. It doesn't take them away from the bad people. We're generating an imbalance of power there. One thing to keep in mind also is that many more people are killed with automobiles and negligent use of an automobile than ever gets killed with firearms. That logic doesn't seem to hold true or doesn't seem to make sense to the anti-gunner. I never get a reply from them that you want to shift topic all the time, but it's a good one to throw back at them because hopefully they might think about it a little bit. I think most people understand the difference between right and wrong. Theft is wrong, lying is wrong, murder is wrong, fraud is wrong. Careless use of an automobile is both wrong and stupid. Careless use of a firearm is no different. I've got a joke here that I want to share with you. I like the joke, not because it's hilariously funny, but because it does have a good point to make, and it is mildly funny. You may choose not to own a gun. That is your right. You might not believe in God. That's your choice. However, if your home is broken into at 3 a.m., there's two things you're going to do. One, you're going to call someone with a gun. Two, you're going to pray they get there in time. This Firearms Act is making criminals out of ordinary, common, decent, everyday citizens for a simple paperwork infraction. Here lies your problem. Do you support me in this constitutional challenge? Or are you content to sit back and let our own government slowly rob you and your children of your property, your heritage, and your rights and freedoms? This fight is being fought because my freedom and safety to love and be with my wife and kids is in jeopardy. And here's the kicker. So are yours. I just happen to be the one in the hot seat right now. Wait and see the outcome of this trial. If I lose, I'll be losing for all Canadians. Then we're going to see very harsh enforcement of this Firearms Act. I've lost my business so far in this fight and spend 11 days in jail. And I'm prepared to spend a lot more if necessary, if it accomplishes the task at hand. I'm very determined in this fight. I've been fighting this for 13 years now. I've been trying to get charged for 2 years now. We had to up the ante to finally make it happen, but it's happened. We now have the charges necessary to get into the courts and try to strike this down on a constitutional basis. We've been fighting this politically for years now, but this is the first chance we've had to get in front of a judge and have a judge strike this law down. And I think it's an exciting opportunity. I know my wife's excited about it. I'm going to go as far as I can with this fight, with or without help. But it would be a crying shame to do it without the support of the people that are affected either directly or indirectly with this disgraceful, ill-conceived Firearms Act. These charges have reduced my earning potential to zero. In case you remembered, I'm a gunsmith. My wife now has the full burden of putting food on the table. I'm not begging here. I simply want to share with you the seriousness of this fight and how determined I am with it. I'm fighting this battle on behalf of all firearms owners. It's up to you to decide whether or not it's a worthwhile battle to support. That's why I'm here. I want to educate people, let them know that there's this golden opportunity in store for us, and also to raise funds. Two things that need to be done, and they go hand in hand. To put a good case together that'll make it to the Supreme Court, we're probably looking at a bill of somewhere in the neighborhood of $300,000. That's a tad more than I've got in my cookie jar. So we're counting on Canadians to pitch in on this fight. I'm asking you to do the math on this. Try to fit this into your budget, please. I'm hoping that by opening the eyes to the injustices of this country, that the Canadians, by and large, will rally up and support and pitch in with this fight. And I pledge and promise that I will do my best not to let down the firearms owners. I pray God every day to try to keep me humble and true to the principles of this case and try to strike this down. I feel very strong in this so far, and it's mostly because of the support I'm getting across the country. Right now, for me personally, moral support is going a lot further than financial support. But to get this through to the Supreme Court, unfortunately in this country, I think justice needs to be bought. That's an unfortunate reality in this country. Money is also needed, but I welcome moral support too. And if any of you are so moved, call my wife. She gets so stressed out with this, it's unbelievable. And what helps her is every once in a while somebody will phone her. Trying to get a hold of me usually, but they'll phone and they'll talk to her, and that boosts her spirits quite a bit. I feel sorry for her because she's very much a part of this fight too. But she's stuck home doing the mundane things, putting food on the table, stoking the wood furnace, and I got a big furnace with 4-foot logs, so they're kind of heavy to chuck around. That's what our son comes in for most of the time. But she's left doing the mundane things, holding up the fort at home. And I really admire her for being able to keep that up, and she's getting stronger too. She was a basket case when I was first released from the jail. She's getting much stronger at it now and more vocal about it. Anyway, sorry to diverge there a little bit, but every once in a while little thoughts like that come in my mind and I feel like I have to share it. What I'm asking for here, please spread the word of what's going on about this golden opportunity. Take a flyer with you, spread the news with people that you know. The other thing I'm also asking for, which feels a little awkward, is I'm asking you to leave here a little lighter in your wallets. Please do so knowing and feeling good that you're doing your part in this. I also ask for you to please pray for myself, my family, and please don't forget to pray for the leaders of this country. They really do need to be nudged back on track. Not all politicians are bad. Police officers aren't bad either. They're doing their job. Pray for them. Pray that they do their job properly and get involved. I'll stay here as long as necessary to talk with anybody who wants to talk to me. I'd very much like to talk to you on a one-to-one basis. Other than that, that's the end of my presentation. Thank you. Sure, yeah, if anybody wants to ask questions, yeah, address them now.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for taking on our fight. We really are defending our rights. But my first question is, are you attempting a legal victory, or is this going to be a political victory that you're seeking?
I'm not too sure how you actually mean that.
Okay,
I think the first trial, the way I look at it, look, I always feel funny talking about that when I got a lawyer in the room. But the way I'm looking at the first trial, I'm looking at that as more of the legal battle. It's the appeals processes, which is going to be a political battle. Because we've got a Supreme Court that's stacked very heavily, well, almost unanimously now, I think, with the Liberals. So they're going to be leaning very strongly to support the law and rule against us in this challenge. The exciting thing is we're going to have a federal election before that happens. We're probably looking at 3 to 5 years before we get to the Supreme Court. That I find very exciting. We can turn the political tide in this country before we get there and hopefully that'll make this a slam dunk.
Right.
Does that answer your question?
Almost. I was going to try to get Cal, but I'll ask the lawyer later. The reason I'm asking is because obviously the liberals have brought in this policy.
Right.
Because it was a political decision, basically to make them look like, you know, the defenders of public security after that Montreal massacre in particular.
Right.
And so they shroud themselves in that.
Right.
I mean, obviously this bill that was passed was really a political decision to garner political support.
That's right.
What you're not getting is any media coverage.
Right.
In fact, were it not for this meeting, I would not have heard of you, and I'm one of the choir that you've been preaching to.
That's right.
So that was, I guess, the first question is if there's an attempt to rally political support, particularly behind the Conservative Party,
yes,
who wants to change the association.
There is. I've got many MPs that are on side here, but
you need media coverage, which you're not getting.
Right.
And any media coverage which you get supports the Conservative Party and their bill.
Yeah.
I guess that's my first question. The second question, which maybe Cal can answer, is that it was my understanding that both the province of New Brunswick and province of Alberta had challenged the constitutionality of the bill.
Okay. Well, that one there, that one I can answer pretty quickly and easily. The constitutional challenge that the provinces got together on, there's a few provinces that did it, wasn't getting to the brass tacks here the way I like to see it done. Mm-hmm. What they were challenging is whose jurisdiction is this licensing and registration under. They challenged it's supposed to be provincial jurisdiction, not federal.
Okay.
And the Supreme Court said that basically you're right, it is provincial jurisdiction, but in this case, because it's public safety issue across the country, we're going to overrule that and rule in favor of the federal doing this as a criminal law. And it wasn't a unanimous decision, it was a split vote.
Right.
The other question was getting publicity. We know we need to do that. When I was first arrested, they put a publication ban on my arrest for my own good, ostensibly.
Oh, I see.
I fought in front of the judge saying, I don't need that protection. I want this to be open and seen by the public. Justice, I feel very strongly, needs to be seen in order to be served properly. The judge ruled against, said, no, we're going to uphold the publication ban. It's for your own good, Mr. Montague.
So that ban is still in place?
No, it's not. Okay. I got a lawyer after that. I was trying to... When I first did this, I'm a bit naive. When I first did this, I had planned on doing this without a lawyer. I planned on doing it on my own because I was so adamant about this. I thought, I could research this. I could put an argument forward. They're not going to imprison somebody that's not really breaking the law. They got to prove this stuff. Well, I'm finding that proof in the legal system is a little bit different than from a scientific background. I know what proof means. It's a little different in the political and legal system. And I got this big eye-opener for my first show cause hearing. I was trying to be released on bail. That's what part of the reason I spent 11 days in jail. I was getting sliced to ribbons. So then I hired a lawyer. A week and a half later, we got the publication ban lifted. Now I can talk about it. I also had my conditions of release wave, so I can now travel across the country. I don't have to report in on a weekly basis. I didn't have to pay bail. The Crown himself stated in front of the judge, we see no reason to hold Mr. Montague any further. We don't think he's a public risk, and he should just be released on his own recognizance. The only real restriction I have is I can't be in possession of firearms. I can't believe a lawyer in the group invited me to come out shooting this afternoon. Well, I guess technically I'm probably okay as long as I'm not, you know, there's a fine line. When are you in possession of a firearm? Legally, just because I'm hanging on to it, I'm not necessarily in possession, as long as there's somebody that's licensed that's still in control of the firearm.
I've got a real nice gun. You'd like to shoot mine.
I'm not willing to push that point of law too much. I'm abiding by these restrictions in the meantime for the sake of having justice being served and get this to court. So I'm a little bit phobic about firearms. I never thought that would ever happen with me, but I see a firearm, I kind of cringe away from them right now. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Any other questions? Okay. There's a donation table set up in the back. Ryan can give you a receipt for your donations if you'd like a receipt. There's also incentive programs. The guy that did this video, he's in the film industry out west, and he's doing amateur videos on his own. He's not a cameraman, he's not a director, he's a backstage type of guy, but he's interested in movies. So he's a very good supporter. He's been doing this stuff pro bono. He drove all the way out from BC to Dryden to interview us for this. Very good support. He's got some videos that he has given to anybody. If you donate over $100, he's got a documentary video that he'll donate to you. Over $250, he's got other videos that he'll donate. Over $500, there's more videos that he's donating that has been done up. You can get more information on that at the back table if you're interested in that. Thanks again.